I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse, Professor Martin Drum. Welcome back, Martin.
Always great to be here, Michael.
It's a little different tonight. Normally, I'm asking where you are, and you're often in Sydney, and I'm in Fremantle. And today, Martin, I'm in Sydney, and you're in Fremantle or thereabouts. Lovely and warm weather in Sydney. I gather Fremantle's been a bit chilly.
Little bit better today, Michael, but it's been a cold few days, that's for sure.
Well, it's Wednesday night in Sydney. I should tell our listeners that straight away because this is a moving feast. What's happening in Iran, what's happening with the US agreement and the agreement with Iran, what's happening with the GS summit people, what's happening in Israel, really? And we're going to focus on that in this sort of special view from the Roundhouse tonight. As we speak, the very latest straight in on the news desk at the New York Times is that President Trump and other world leaders at the G7 meeting issued a joint statement just now praising Mr. Trump's quote unquote strong leadership in securing a quote unquote breakthrough with Iran as they gathered at the meeting. The statement is described as an unexpectedly firm declaration of agreement amongst many of the world's leading powers. And they said that the preliminary deal between the US and Iran provided a quote, historic opportunity to prevent Iran from acquiring any nuclear weapon, close the quote. And that's the thrust of it, Martin. It is interesting that the G7 leaders, who include Britain and France and Italy and Japan and Germany, have all and Canada have all received big rounds of criticism and admonishment from President Trump over time, but apparently they're all big buddies at the moment. So tell me straight off, tell our listeners, what do you make of this so-called agreement with US and Iran?
Well, look, the first thing, to be clear, it's always good to see a peace deal arrive, and a ceasefire is better than no ceasefire, Michael, and it's better that they're negotiating rather than fighting, because just because of sheer loss of life and destruction across the entire Middle East, and of course the economic impact that this war has had. Having said that, what have we really got here? I think at best you would describe it as an agreement to have an agreement, really. It's an MOU, and MOUs, if you've ever been involved with them, it's not that they're bad, but they don't really do much. It's what really happens next that matters in an MOU, if you've ever been one, that been involved in one.
An MOU, of course, is a memorandum of understanding. It's not an agreement as such. It's, as you say, it's an agreement to agree something. So what do we know about the agreement to agree here?
Well, we don't have the explicit details, but what we know what's not in it. How about we say that? We know it's not got any agreement about Iran's nuclear ambitions, which has been of late the main principle, bella causus, bellum causus, if you could call it, use the Latin. The principal cause of war, we're told from Trump, was to limit Iran's nuclear ambitions. But there's no resolution to this, apparently, in the agreement. But there is the Straits of Hormuz being opened up and the oil flowing and all of that. And that's been trumpeted as the main outcome for the agreement. And while that's great, let's just remember that in February, the Straits of Hormuz were open and the oil was flowing before this war was launched. So the big question is what we've actually achieved.
Well, not only that, Martin, but there seems to be, until we actually see the agreement, if we ever see the agreement, confusion about on what terms the Straits of Hormuz are going to be open and the ships will be sailing in and out carrying oil again. Because there's still a suggestion, particularly coming out of the Iranian camp, that they'll be charging something, perhaps not a tariff, but a fee.
Well, this is another component that doesn't appear to have been addressed, Michael, and that's how Iran might have some compensation for all the destruction that it suffered. Now, of course, the US doesn't directly want to offer anything, and that would be almost an admission of failure or defeat. However, analysts will tell you that down the track there'll be some kind of Middle East reconstruction fund, and inevitably, some of that money will flow through to Iran. So that's another thing that's definitely not discussed in this potential MOU.
The other area of great interest is, and one never fully understands how these international finance things work, but it seems that the West, through the banking system, is able to put a freeze on funds belonging to countries, like a freeze on Russian funds when they're not behaving well. And they've done the freeze on Iran as well. And that seems to be another topic of conversation to go into an agreement that they'll take the brakes off. And I suppose that's one way of getting money to Iran so they can do reconstruction.
Well, you've made a good point. That one likely thing in order to give Iran some way of recovering is just to lift the sanctions and to allow its oil exports to continue. Trump certainly said that naval blockade will lift, but we've not really got any timeline on either that or the Straits of Hormuz actually reopening.
It is interesting how the G7 leaders have all come out and wrapped their arms around him and said what a great man he is. Is that because they know something? I suspect they do that we don't. Or are they trying to send a message to Iran that the West, if you like, is now strongly supporting the Americans?
I think that there's a concerted effort from a lot of these Western leaders to get back on good terms with Donald Trump. It's been a fairly fractured relationship over the journey, and there's still a sense that, it's particularly most of those countries being in NATO, that they all need one another. So I think that that's their natural position. But look, it's probably. It's really interesting to see if that consensus will hold when some of the details of the agreement come out.
I always remember a wonderful aphorism I picked up in the little book called The Education of Little Tree. The little Cherokee boy asks his grandfather lots of questions and gets wonderfully wise answers from his granddad, who, when it comes to fishing, says, if you want to catch a fish, you have to think like a fish. Never understood exactly what it means, Martin, but I love it. But it does get me trying to think like an Iranian. I mean, imagine if you were in charge of Iran at the moment. Leave aside the ideological differences, whether you're on the Republican sort of committee running everything there, whether you're a soldier, whether you're a moderate. How do you get the country back in shape?
Well, there'll be a lot of work to do. I think there's also a lot of work to convince average Iranians that a peace deal is a viable measure, because they wouldn't be trusting the US. You recall they were in the middle of negotiations when the US commenced the bombing, and I wouldn't think I would think the political leaders of Iran have a bit of work to do to either to convince their own people that this is a pathway to go and pathway suitable pathway to go. Of course, we haven't even got to Israel yet and how they might see this accord.
Well, let me ask you that precise question, because that seems to be well, not sure it's an elephant in the room, but perhaps that is an appropriate time to use the expression. Is Lebanon, do you think, what are we told about Lebanon? Are they included in this agreement, this MOU?
Well, we'll see when the details come out, but the Iranians keep insisting that they are. And Donald Trump has had some very interesting, intense conversations with Netanyahu of late. And most of that's around his frustration that Israel is playing their own game here. And they appear to be quite rogue. And, they were a sticking point in negotiations, if you recall, last week. When their ongoing military operations in Lebanon were a sticking point. So I'm not convinced that that Israel wants this deal. I'm not necessarily convinced that they'll abide by any peace agreement. And then there's, of course, even the question of whether Hezbollah will abide by this agreement.
Well, you've got those two really interesting, tension points. You've got Israel saying, well, we've got this buffer zone inside Lebanon, but they're just about prepared to call it country that belongs to them, it seems to me. And they are going to respond to anything that anybody in the Hezbollah group does. Maybe or maybe not, though, not again revisit Beirut and try and bomb them. But I have wondered at times, even though Trump says that he got frustrated with Netanyahu, whether he's done it for domestic purposes, whether he's tried to show to the various lobbies in the United States that, you know, he can be tough with Israel too, because he's got midterm elections not that far away.
The biggest single driver here for Donald Trump is the domestic pressure to end this war. And I think the Republican Party was becoming increasingly fractured over this. There's a lot of people there that remember he's promised to stay out of wars like this. They weren't entirely behind it. There's even the Tucker Carlsons of this world, if you recall, that were uncomfortable with it. All these podcasters, the alternative media, Michael. There are big factors here.
Well, all you need, though, is you've got an MOU, the 60 days, let's remind everybody, 60 days. I mean, we've had sort of ceasefires before, 60 days, 2 months in a conflict that's gone on for nearly four, 60 days when they can get the ships running again, where we'll find out later in the week whether or not a fee is going to be charged by Iran for ships coming and going. Or some sort of levy. And even if that doesn't happen, just imagine Hezbollah has some minor infraction which Israel doesn't like. Israel hits them big time, disproportionately, as Trump would probably agree in so many cases. And Iran gets tired and somebody starts firing at each other again. The first thing Iran will do, presumably, is close off the Straits of Hormuz again.
Well, it's now that they know it's a successful tactic, that's always on the cards. The next 60 days will be interesting watching. I wonder if it will be a bit like the ceasefire as it is now, which is a shaky ceasefire at best, with Israel and Hezbollah fighting and ongoing sporadic attacks. I'm a bit cynical about the ability of Israel, of US and Iran to strike a comprehensive deal within 60 days.
And we're back to this point about no nuclear weapons in Iran's hands. You just heard me read that bit out. The G7 leaders are all enthusiastic. I mean, it's a noble aim to stop Iran, another country in the world, with being nuclear powered to go rogue and start dropping them in places. But you know, is that going to happen? We keep hearing talk that the talks are going to be about Iran's entitlement or whatever to enrich uranium. That's the prelude to creating a nuclear weapon, Martin.
Well, let's just remember this. In 2015, there was the so-called Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. That was a nuclear deal that was where Iran agreed to keep their nuclear enrichment for energy purposes only. So it's the 3.67%, which is way too low for nuclear arsenals, and to keep their total stockpile to under 300 kilos.
So
That was 2015.
this was with Barack Obama.
Barack Obama had a deal with Iran, and they had it was the International Atomic Energy Agency that was overseeing it and regularly coming in and inspecting. So that was sitting there when he walked into the Oval Office.
Well, J.D. Vance has been sprouting, amongst others, I think, very recently, and all this, there's going to be inspectors. You'd be forgiven for thinking it's Obama's agreement, Mark II, that's coming.
I think the best they could get was what they had under Obama. And if they got that, that would be a pretty good deal. But gee, what a painful way to get there.
And Trump doesn't want to be compared with Obama when it comes to doing this deal. He wants to show that he's done a better deal.
Well, they committed to not pursuing nuclear weapons and not pursuing nuclear enrichment for that purpose in 2015. The best he could hope for, you would think, is that he gets something similar. Really.
Well, people are running around trying to compare what they think are going to be the details in this, well, preliminary agreement and a possible final agreement with what Obama did strike up. The trouble is, though, there wasn't a war. There wasn't this crashing and bashing and all the destruction in Iran, and nor was, in those days, Iran firing things at the Emirates, at Qatar, at Saudi Arabia, at all of the Middle East there. I mean, it must have really changed things world, well, in that part of the world, Martin.
They say that the biggest danger for a powerful country is to be unsuccessful in an asymmetric conflict where you're the superior power, because that's where the expectations are at the highest, and that's where your international standing can diminish the greatest. So that's Russia and Ukraine, Michael, and it's a different conflict, different parameters, but US has not really achieved substantial goals here. I think it'd be difficult to argue that.
It must be considered, surely, Martin, one of the greatest policy failures of the United States in the, I don't know, since the turn of the 20th century.
I think it's better than Iraq, let me say that. And I only say that because Iraq was a multi-year conflict that claimed hundreds of thousands of US lives, let alone Iraqi lives. And that was devastating for all concerned. This is a shorter conflict, Michael, but it's still a major strategic failure, we think.
Yes, I mean, Afghanistan was a big thing for the US.
Yes, again, Afghanistan again unsuccessful in terms of ridding it of the Taliban. Eventually came back despite 20 years. I suppose at least with Afghanistan, they could say that they rid it of Al Qaeda, the architects of September 11, and there was a reason why they went into that war.
If you live in Tel Aviv or Haifa, somewhere around about the place in Israel, I suppose you're going to be hearing on your television and your print media, on the equivalent of Fremantle Shipping News, Benjamin Netanyahu saying, really, it's him who's been the victor in this conflict with Iran.
Well, certainly he's degraded the Iranians' capacity, which is a strategic goal of Iran, of Israel against Iran, and they've further degraded Hezbollah capacity in the same, in the same conflict. Yeah, there is some short-term benefit there for Israel. But note one other thing that's not been talked about here, Michael, was supposed to see the reining in of Iran's proxies in the region, including Hezbollah, the Yemenis, the Houthis in Yemen, and of course, there's Hamas and that ilk. Certainly, Hezbollah has not really been crushed, nor the Houthis or others.
And Martin, we'll start to draw this podcast to an end, but unfortunately, we know that these things are going to go on and on, and they're not actually going to come to an end. What about the West Bank and the settlements happening there? I mean, six Western countries, Britain, Norway, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and France all came out reminding people they've recognised a Palestinian state, and they do not want to see more settlement happening in the West Bank. But you get this feeling that after this conflict, we're going to see Israel going ahead full steam.
Well, the unclear aspect here is whether this helps or hinders some comprehensive peace process in Palestine, because maybe it actually emboldens Iran and Israel's enemies. Maybe it makes that deal harder, Michael. It's really unclear how it's. It would have been good for Trump to actually focus a lot of his attention post the Palestinian ceasefire on trying to consolidate that area of the world.
Well, Martin, as I get older, I have no either ambitions or confidence that any of these things are going to be resolved. Last night at the Sydney Theatre Company down at Darling Harbour, had yet another wonderful performance of David Wenham in an Iliad. He's basically traced human conflict from the time of Troy and what's happened since, and we just keep fighting. We just keep smiting each other. We become enraged. And really, is there any reason to think that whatever gets agreed here is going to stop anything much anytime soon, Martin?
Well, it'd be nice to have more hope than that. It would be good to have a broader peace agreement emanate from this. There's 60 days, so the clock's ticking, Michael, for this to happen. And isn't Trump the great deal maker? Haven't we been told that, Michael?
Well, you also told me, Martin, and I never forget it. Don't look at what he says, look at what he does.
But still good advice, I think.
Martin, thanks for joining me today. These really are important as well as interesting days, and your analysis is appreciated, I know, by our readers near and far. Thank you for joining me tonight.
Always a pleasure, Michael.